Hello and welcome to episode number 31 of Cho Squared. I'm your host, Andrew Chelney, and as per usual, we've got a ton to talk about today. Recording on Friday as opposed to Thursday, had a pretty hectic day yesterday. You would have known if you would have followed me on Twitter at Andrew Chelney or the podcast at Cho Squared. You should probably follow that on social media. Supposed to start recording around 6:45 last night. It's 6 o'clock. I got my notes prepared. I'm ready to go. Then I got this text with two tickets to the Rangers-Hawks game. Before I know it, I text my guest, who I'll introduce in a second here, if he's okay with leaving the conversation to today. Luckily, he was. I called my dad. We booked it to MSG. We parked on 26th Street. MSG's on 32nd, I believe. 31st, 32nd, around there. And luckily, I've been going to the gym since graduating college because we both sprinted to the Garden because we didn't want to miss the action. In case you can't tell, we like hockey. I'm now 21-1-0 all time at Madison Square Garden. So if PR is listening, hook me up with season tickets, please. Before we get into it here, please make sure to follow the podcast on Twitter at Cho Squared and on Facebook at Cho Squared for more hot takes, news by future guests, poll questions, and a whole lot more. Please rate the show. If you enjoy listening, it means a whole lot to me. And every time you either like the show on SoundCloud, give it a rating on iTunes, follow it on Spotify, etc. Puppy gets a hug from its owner. I don't make the rules here, just making sure you are in the know. If you prefer listening to podcasts on YouTube, search Cho Squared Podcast and the show is there too. The majority of the show will be trying to figure out what in the world is going on in Anaheim. The Ducks have finally won a game. It took them exactly a calendar month to get it done. They beat Minnesota 3-0 last night. Gibson with a shutout. Last time they won was December 17th against Pittsburgh in a 4-2 win. 12 straight losses prior to that win. And now they're somehow tied with Minnesota and Edmonton for the wild card spot. The West is not so great this season. By the way, speaking of the Wild, breaking news yesterday, the Wild traded Nito Niederreiter to Carolina in exchange for Victor Rask. According to people that I trust that watch the Hurricanes more than I do, Victor Rask has been pretty much invisible the past two seasons in Carolina. Meanwhile, Nino has way better analytics and is overall a much better player than Victor Rask. So a bit of a weirder trade for Minnesota, but Carolina gets that much better. We'll talk about that trade later on in the show. Now, the main event here, the Anaheim Ducks, a team that would more than likely be dead last in the standings if not for the play of John Gibson, a goaltender that, as I've said on the show before, has to be in the Vezina conversation. I mean, who else are you going to give it to? Gibson is literally the only reason the Ducks still have a fighting chance at a playoff spot. Playing out of his mind, .921 save percentage contributed 9 points to the Ducks, according to HockeyReference.com. Gibson is their MVP and probably is the best worthy contender for the Vezina Trophy. But no matter how well he plays, the Ducks can't get out of their own way. They lost 12 in a row prior to that win last night. Somehow, head coach Randy Carlyle still has his job. GM Bob Murray gave a statement a few days ago saying that he's not looking to replace Carlyle and instead looking at making player changes, which is fine. But he's made a bunch of trades this season that haven't really done anything to help the team. On the 14th, he traded Andrew Cogliano to the Stars for Devin Shore. Then yesterday, they traded Pontus Aberg to the Wild for Justin Klus. That was Wednesday, excuse me. They traded him on Wednesday. And they also traded two more trades at like 1 a.m. on Wednesday night / Thursday morning. They traded a 2020 seventh round pick and Luke Shen to the Canucks for Rangers legend Michael Delzato, and also shipped Joseph Blandizzi to the Penguins to get Derek Grant, who was already a Duck for 66 games last season. We'll do a deep dive into the stats of those players I just listed and talk about what plan GM Murray has, if any. I mean, there's a lot to get to. We'll talk about the future of the Ducks, how Silverberg and Kessler going on IR changes the landscape of this team this season, the poll question, and a whole lot more. Joining me this week is editor of Anaheim Calling and is just as confused about these trades and this team as I am, CJ Woodling. CJ, what's up?
Hi, Andrew. It's going pretty well, I think, about as well as we can be for the way this hockey team is playing, and really about as well as we can, and being just in total utter confusion. So if you don't follow the team, don't worry, because we follow the team in depth and we still have no idea what's happening.
So Okay, so before we get into the super nitty-gritty here, CJ, I got to ask you something super important. My opinion of you hinges on this one question. Before I ask before I ask it, though, you drink coffee, right?
Kind of. Like basic white girl coffee.
Okay, okay. So this is, are you ready for the super incredibly important, super duper valuable question here?
Let's go. Hit me with it.
Okay, so a few days ago, there was this Athletic article published by Craig Morgan that talked about the rivalry within the hockey community between Dunkin' Donuts and Tim Hortons coffee. Which do you prefer? And you can also opt for a different option if you want.
Mm. I'm going to go with a different option because I'm based in Orange County, Southern California, and we don't have any Tim Hortons down here. We do have some Dunkin' Donuts. They've been popping up a little bit more recently. They used to not be anywhere around here. Now we've got a few. I'm going to go ahead and come in here with another option. There's a Vietnamese coffee shop down here called BLK Coffee. That place is amazing. They specialize in a special type of Vietnamese drink that pretty much gets you about as wired as you possibly can be and makes you want to lift a car when you drink it. So BLK is going to be my choice, although I have had both Dunkin' Donuts and Tim Hortons, and I'd probably have to lean towards Tim Hortons.
I'm really glad you said that. I'm very, very glad you said that because Dunkin' Donuts, they have good hot coffee. I can't knock them for that. But their iced coffee is a disgrace to coffee. It is 1% coffee, 98% water, and also 1% shame because it is watered down garbage.
Yeah, I'm really glad I haven't had their iced coffee now, and I will know to avoid it in the future. So it sounds like they are the last month of Anaheim Ducks of coffee.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I have a lot of people a lot of friends that love Dunkin' Donuts, and I can't knock them for it. But at the end of the day, their iced coffee, if you want iced coffee, go literally anywhere else, I think in my opinion anyway, because their iced coffee is so watery and so it just leaves you with this bad taste that's like, I'm not drinking coffee. It's like I'm tasting coffee-flavored water. I mean, there's a difference between putting ice in your coffee, right, and then just literally mixing water and coffee and then putting more water in there. I mean, I don't know what they do with their coffee, but whatever they do, it's not working and they need a new solution. But I'm glad you prefer Timmy's over Dunkin' Donuts and BLK Coffee. If I ever get to Anaheim, which hopefully should be, I mean, hopefully in my future, then I will definitely keep an eye on that for sure.
Absolutely.
So the Anaheim Ducks here. I mean, like I said in the opening, they went a calendar month, without winning a game. And now they finally get one on a shutout victory over the Wild last night. What have you seen from this team over the past month? I mean, has it just been the scoring? Has it been the defense? What part, or maybe it's the entire team in all aspects of the game, but what has been the Ducks' problem that they just couldn't win a game to save their lives last month?
There were a couple of things. To me, though, the number one reason why the Ducks went on such a massive losing streak was that John Gibson was no longer covering up the flaws of this team. The Ducks, and if you ask a lot of us at Anaheim Calling, we've known that the Ducks have had some scoring issues for quite a while. The Ducks' offense really starts and ends with Ryan Getzlaf. You know, Rickard Rakell has been a 30-goal scorer for the past couple of seasons, and he's been great, but he's mostly played on the top line with Getzlaf. Andre Kasha has kind of been a revelation as a seventh-round pick to be some of that depth scoring that the Ducks have needed for quite a while. But outside of those three players, Anaheim hasn't really had much of an offensive threat. Especially with Corey Perry having a down year, still reasonably productive, but having a down year by his standards for the last couple of seasons. So really, John Gibson was covering up. And this is, by the way, this is a complete direct verbatim quote from Bob Murray at exit interviews after being swept by San Jose last season, that good goaltending tends to cover up a lot of the crap. That is a direct quote from Bob Murray, and he's completely right. John Gibson was the only reason, really, that the Ducks were in a playoff spot, were having any sort of threatening presence in the NHL. And during this last 12-game losing streak, John Gibson's save percentage went down to about .898. So he was a sub-900 save percentage, while also, I believe, facing amongst some of the most shots in the league, experienced Randy Carlyle hockey. That's pretty that's pretty common right there. But he just it really felt like he was tired. It really felt like just the weight of all of these games and of constantly facing shots and of being in here, especially with Ryan Miller down and Chad Johnson being the backup. Now the Ducks don't have quite the reliability in the backup netminder section as they did previously earlier this season. So really what happened, John Gibson went to .898 save percentage, and the Ducks kind of continued scoring less than an average of 2 goals a game. And you saw this 12-game losing streak happen.
They also, if I remember correctly, they started off a game recently. They scored the first 3 goals. They ended the first period up 3-0, and then they lost 7-4. I mean, as a Rangers fan, over the past few seasons, over the past Henrik Lundqvist's career, I've seen a lot of, if not for the goalie, then this team would be garbage. So what you're seeing hits home very well, because Henrik Lundqvist has been the only reason the Rangers have made the playoffs in a lot of the seasons that they have made with him on the team. I mean, it's totally a situation that I'm very very familiar with. But the only thing that can make your situation worse right now is if you fire Randy Carlyle and hire Alain Vigneault, because you will get the exact same thing, except for worse deployment. Alain Vigneault, I mean, again,
which is why and a couple of others of us don't particularly want Vigneault, because we know that he's been a similar, them actually has another head coach for a little bit. It's not Vigneault, and mostly because we know Quenneville's out of reach because they don't pay him what he wants, but it is what it is.
Yeah, no, Alain Vigneault is definitely not the coach that you want. I mean, granted, he does a lot of things right, but at the end of the day, it's just I maintain this point, and I could be wrong, could be right, I mean, I don't know, but I do maintain that if literally anyone else was coaching the Rangers against the Senators in that playoff series, Rangers would have won that series easily. Easily. They should have won that series. Mm-hmm. But because of his atrocious deployment, his atrocious style of attacking the Senators, they lost. And in pretty terrible fashion, too. And I maintain that I feel like if my chair was coaching that team, they would have at least been more competitive. I mean, that playoff series was a disgrace. They should have won that series, but they didn't, because I think the biggest reason was Alain Vigneault's deployment. But anyway, you really don't want to hire Alain Vigneault if you're Anaheim. I guess if you're another team, maybe, but I think there are better options out there, especially with, like you just said, Joel Quenneville, who still doesn't have a job. I'm sure he's taking some time off because he's been coaching for the last what seems like 800 years in a row. I'm sure he's tired, and I'm sure he wants his well-deserved rest from the grind of coaching an NHL team. But I'm sure sooner rather than later he will be behind a bench, and it is interesting to see where he ends up. I mean, at the end of the season, I've talked about this before on the show. Philadelphia could be a good option for him. Minnesota could be a great option for him. St. Louis, Anaheim could be another dark horse to land Coach Q. But my only concern with that is it might be a little bit too far from his home, from his family, to be the head coach in Anaheim. Is there any possibility that Coach Q can be a Duck, do you think?
I don't believe that Quenneville will be a Duck, mostly because of salary reasons. Quenneville will likely want around $6 million a year, which is about the going rate for some of the top head coaches in hockey. And the Ducks, I believe, don't have really a history of paying a head coach any more than $2 million. I don't think it's been confirmed, but rumors are that Randy Carlyle is making around, I think, slightly less than $2 million, maybe $2 million or something like that. The Ducks our team. They're not necessarily a budget team. They don't necessarily have the financial power of the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Rangers or somebody like that. But they're not exactly a budget team, and they're actually over the salary cap right now when you take into long-term injured reserve into account. But coaching is an area that they have not really spent a ton on, and that right there, I believe, puts the Ducks out of the Joel Quenneville sweepstakes.
Well, the Ducks finally won a game, right? Let's say they win their next 2, 3, 4, whatever it is. They're somehow still in the playoff race. I mean, this Western Conference right now, this powerhouse that used to be the best conference in the league, now you're looking at it and you're like, oh boy, a lot of these teams are just not good, and yet somehow they're still either in playoff spot or playoff contention. Let's say they go on a winning streak here, and now they're suddenly in a firm playoff spot. I mean, how does that change the outlook on this team, at least for this season? Because before the game last night, the thought process was, okay, the Ducks are going to start selling. This team needs to rebuild and this and that. And now they won, and now they are tied with Minnesota and Edmonton for that last wildcard spot. So let's say they win 2, 3 more games. Now they jump these teams. Now they're firmly in a playoff spot. Well, what do you do if you're GM Murray?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and one that we debate every single day at Anaheim Calling. Bob Murray came on record a few weeks ago, maybe about a month ago or so, and straight up told the press that the Ducks are not Stanley Cup contenders. He straight up said that, but he never said that the Ducks needed to rebuild. He more implied that it was kind of a transitionary period. So being in the playoffs, the Ducks had made the playoffs for the last 6 straight seasons. Being in the playoffs is obviously great and has good financial aspects to it, but Murray knows that his team likely is not going to contend for a cup this season, or maybe even the next season or two. And the thing with him is that he's extremely, extremely patient with his prospects and his assets, sometimes to a fault. Sometimes it's a good thing as well. But when we've got people like Troy Terry, Sam Steele, Maxime Comtois, all of these prospects, and the fact that he has had several opportunities to move them for big impact win now pieces and hasn't, indicates that he really is placing a lot of faith in the future of the Ducks. So the frustration that I think a lot of us have, and I think that I have with the Ducks right now, is that, look, if you're not considering yourself a Stanley Cup contender, why are you not selling off some more significant pieces to bolster yourself for future runs? He's not doing that. He's moving bottom 6 pieces that really aren't going to have, likely will not have much of an effect either this season or down the road. So do the Ducks sit basically tight and be like, oh yeah, cool, let's get into the playoffs, that's totally fine, we're cool with that, and pick late in the first round again? Or do they sell off some pieces, try to get a better pick, not necessarily tank, but sell off some pieces, get the better picks, get some prospects with some upside, and give them a shot to win maybe as soon as next season? There's been a debate for a lot of people in the Anaheim fan base that, what are you okay with? Like, what is your goal for the team that you support or that you're in control of? Is it, oh, you're going to make the playoffs and that's totally fine, you don't care about anything else? Or do you want to win a cup? And a lot of these moves that Bob Murray is making sometimes, indicate that he's just fine making the playoffs and that winning a cup isn't necessarily priority number one. And if that's the case, then I think we've got much bigger issues as a franchise.
Well, let's talk about these trades that GM Murray has made over the past few days. First of all, I feel like the biggest trade that he made was trading Andrew Cogliano to the Dallas Stars for Devin Shore. Cogliano, 31 years old, having a down year this season, admittedly. Only 3 goals, 8 assists in 47 games, but was a fan favorite in Anaheim. Then he got Devin Shore in return, 24 years old, 5 goals and 12 assists. CJ, in your opinion, what was Murray trying to do with this move? Obviously, Cogliano does make about $1 million more per season, but I think that this trade just seems more reactionary than anything else.
That trade, to me, screams leadership. Bob Murray had indicated after the loss against Winnipeg that gave them their 11th loss in a row that he put out a statement saying that he wasn't looking at a coaching change and that he was looking for players to step up because the compete level wasn't there. And Bob Murray has a history of this throughout his entire time as general manager. When he first fired Randy Carlyle, before he fired Randy Carlyle, he blamed his players more than he did the coach. And he's got a history of calling out the players before doing anything else. He really hasn't taken a whole lot of accountability for the roster that he's put on the ice or that he's put together, which is frustrating and a kind of a point of contention for fans a lot. But Andrew Cogliano being traded is him basically saying, look, I'm not happy with our core, with our leadership. Andrew Cogliano was considered one of the main pieces of the leadership group in Anaheim. And this was Bob Murray's basically his warning shot to the rest of the team. Like, hey, I have no problem trading a fan favorite, you know, get it together and let's go here. And I also wouldn't be surprised if Cogliano maybe called out Carlyle or Murray behind the scenes. Cogliano was always known, especially to a lot of reporters, as a very honest interviewer who did not give a whole lot of these stock answers. He would take responsibility. He would call out certain aspects of play. He was a very honest dude, very refreshing as far as hockey interviews go. There is some suspicion that maybe he did kind of get into it with some of the leadership. That is a little bit more speculation than actually reported, but this was definitely a leadership culture trade first than it was really anything else.
So let's talk about this losing streak then. And in your opinion, how much of it is Carlisle's fault and how much of it was the players not either not competing well or not playing well or a combination of both? What's the split there? Is it Carlisle's fault? Is it the players' fault? Is it both parties' fault? What's the split there?
That's a question that I think is going to vary person by person. I don't necessarily think there's a wrong answer. Let me put it this way. I think the only wrong answer to that question is that it's 100% one or the other. I think it's a bit of both. How much do you think each party is responsible is entirely up to, I think, personal kind of evaluation. In my opinion, I think it's maybe 60, 70% coaching and then the rest being the players. Even if the Ducks fired Randy Carlyle and got a good coach who shapes them up, gets them into more modern, updated system, and can motivate them a little bit better, the Ducks, to me, they still have a lot of roster issues. They're not going to be Stanley Cup contenders. It maybe just kind of stabilizes the ship more than anything else. But it is at a point right now where the Ducks are getting outshot almost every single game. They have enough talent on this roster to not go through 12 game losing streaks, to not be at the bottom of the conference. Yeah, John Gibson is a lot of that, but there are some good and interesting secondary pieces on the Ducks behind Ryan Getzlaf and Rickard Rakell to make it to where this team can at least be interesting and cause a little bit of noise in the playoffs. So in my opinion, I think it's more Carlisle than it is the roster, but it is to some extent both.
I think that's the perfect answer to that question, because at the end of the day, I think if Bob Murray doesn't like the compete level of the team, I think it has to start at coaching, right? Because if you can't coach properly, then or if you're not coaching the right way or whatever goes on behind closed doors in Anaheim, something had to happen, right? Because this team, as you said, I mean, the compete level isn't there. Something had to have happened because this team, at least on paper, is better than their record. So to me, it says that something is wrong either in but before games or during games that is going on with the top people that you look to for leadership, whether it be on ice or behind the bench or what have you. There's something going on that is negating the talent that this team has, at least on paper, again, because this team looks like they should be better than they are. And yet when you say their compete level isn't there, it tells me that something is wrong, something is funky, either off ice or during the games, or something is off that shouldn't be off. And at the end of the day, that either has to fall either has to fall on the players with the letters on their jerseys or on the people behind the bench that are telling the players what to do.
Absolutely. And that's the thing for a lot of people who maybe necessarily think that, look, this is the player's fault 100%. And we have heard a little bit of that from a small section of the fan base. And again, my response to that, and I think you hit it perfectly, is the fact that then if it is, let's just ignore the fact that maybe tactics, strategy, deployment, whatever it is that, you know, for on ice tactics, if that's not the issue and the issue is players not competing, not buying into the system, not putting in the effort that they needed every night, that's part of the head coach's job as well. If that's the case, then what is Randy Carlyle's role exactly then? Is he just there so he gets free tickets to Ducks games and he gets really close to the ice? Like, that's part of a head coach's DNA, that if the players aren't buying into your system, either you need to try and do something about that, bring in help to get something to do about it. It certainly is a point of it, but a good share of that compete level falls on the head coach.
No, I think you're exactly right about that. Another trade that happened over the past few days that I really wanted to ask you about, because I'm very confused about this trade, and I've gotten conflicting reports about this trade, player-wise anyway. So Pontus Aberg got traded for Justin Kloos. Aberg, 11 goals, 8 assists in 37 games this season. Also play in the AHL, picked up 2 points in 2 games. CJ, the Ducks are struggling to score goals, but they sent down Aberg and then they traded him. They got Justin Kloos back, but both guys are 25 years old. But Kloos has only played one NHL game, and that was last season. I mean, he's a career minor leaguer, and yet this trade, I don't understand this trade. Maybe you do. What is going on? Why either not play Aberg? He's been a healthy scratch for a few games, if I'm not mistaken. So you scratch Aberg. You send him down to the AHL and trade him. I mean, what's the reasoning behind that? What did Aberg do wrong that got sent that made him get sent to Minnesota?
So the first thing, Aberg was never actually sent down to San Diego. He was just scratched for 4 games before the trade. He would have required waivers if they had done that, but. You know, with Aberg being scratched and then traded, that was extremely confusing to us too, because he was the Ducks' second leading goal scorer. By the way, that does say something about the Ducks' offense right there. The fact that Pontus Aberg, who couldn't stick in Edmonton, couldn't stick in Nashville, and was a waiver pickup, was the Ducks' second leading scorer. That right there tells you all you need to know about the Ducks' impotency on offense. But him being scratched when he was the second leading scorer, when he was also one of the Ducks' best play driving forwards, he had the 4th highest percentage of on-ice shot attempt control in the league, on the team. He did only have about, I think it was like 2 points in his previous 5 games before he ended up being scratched. But to be fair, the rest of the team also was not scoring. So really, it's not like he wasn't producing at a rate lower compared to most of the other players. A lot of us think that this trade, while we completely disagree with it, we think that there may have been an attitude issue. There are rumors that were reported by Brian Hayward, the Ducks color commentator, that Aberg wasn't putting in much effort off the ice in order to improve while he was being healthy scratched. There had been some whispers as well of some attitude problems and locker room problems with Aberg, both in Edmonton and in Nashville before. They were more kind of like whispers more than anything else. And a lot of them, I think, were unconfirmed. But this trade, to me, the only logical explanation for this trade is that there was either an attitude issue or he came to blows with either Carlyle or Murray. And honestly, we're probably not going to find out for sure what it was, because Anaheim is notorious for operating an extremely tight media bubble. That bubble has come under attack recently in this losing streak, but they keep things very close to the chest. And I don't know for sure if we'll really know the full answer, but attitude issues, effort issues, that seems to be the only logical reason why this trade ended up going down.
But surely they could have gotten something better than a career minor leaguer for him. I mean, again, 19 points in 37 games. Sure. I mean, the reports, the whispers, as you said, of locker room problems could be an issue. But again, I mean, 19 points in 37 games, that should land you theoretically more than a 25-year-old AHLer.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. The only thing that I will say, I'm actually not – when this trade first went down, I was extremely confused and almost kind of angry, thinking, like, why are you going to do this to this score? But if you think about the context of Åberg being acquired, that it's – you can get a little bit annoyed at the return that this trade fetched, but I think that we need to pump the brakes a little bit on being outraged, because he was a waiver pickup. The Ducks got him for free, and the fact that they got anything for him coming back despite his accomplishments – certainly is not a negative. And to me, Justin Kloos, again, great AHL scorer. To me, getting Justin Kloos was way more of a move for the San Diego Gulls, who are absolutely on fire right now. I believe they're on a, I think it's a 15, 16 game point streak, something like that. They had rattled off about 7 or 8 straight wins recently. To me, getting Justin Kloos is Bob Murray kind of wanting to go for possibly a Calder Cup run. And the trade of Kloos as well, and potentially putting him in the AHL, also makes a lot of sense when you realize that Max Jones and Troy Terry, especially Terry, who is one of the dominant players in the AHL this season, have been called up and did play in the Wild game last night. So San Diego is lacking a little bit. I would expect Kloos to immediately make an impact over there.
Well, a waiver pickup that kind of sticks in my mind in terms of, we got this player for nothing and now he's better than advertised, is Paul Byron, right? He got picked up by Montreal from Calgary, kind of just like this, oh, you know, we'll pick him up as a depth forward. I mean, this guy, this is now his fourth season in Montreal. He now has the A on his sweater, and he's more than, I mean, I would assume triple, quadruple the expectations that he had when he arrived in Montreal. And I see what you mean by he's a weird pickup, so getting something for him is better than not getting anything for him. But at the end of the day, I feel like Åberg, or is it Åberg? Is it Åberg?
It is Åberg, yeah.
Åberg, okay. I think that with Åberg, right, because he has surpassed expectations, I do feel like while he was a waiver pickup, I don't think that should be the be-all end-all for what he is, at least value-wise, because he's been putting up points, at least when he's playing. I see what you mean by the Gulls getting some help there, but I do feel like Anaheim kind of got something a little bit. I mean, Åberg isn't going to be a 60-goal scorer, but I do feel like he's going to be a depth scorer that could potentially help a bottom six out in any in some way. At least I kind of feel like Anaheim lost the trade a little bit, even though, like you said, Kloos will be a big get for the Gulls, but it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense for Anaheim.
Yeah, I would completely, and to me, if you zoom out of the entire picture here, and you look at the entire picture here, this trade is just another kind of symptom of why a lot of us in Anaheim are so confused right now with this team. That, you know, shipping out Åberg, even for an underwhelming return for what you think he should probably get, you know, shipping out Åberg, that basically signals, look, we don't really necessarily care about competing and want, and we don't care about making the playoffs, and that we want to get a better draft pick and do a quick little retool here. But then, you know, you put that in context with the other trades of Andrew Cogliano for Devin Shore, and trying to shake up and send a message to the team to wake up and start playing better. You know, it just the pieces of the puzzle don't fit together. And I think that's what's most frustrating to people with regards to the recent activity here.
The other trade that happened with Anaheim and Pittsburgh is the Blendisi for Grant trade. I mean, Grant was a Duck last season. Now he's back. I mean, what's your thoughts on that trade? Again, it's just one of those trades that doesn't really change anything, and it just feels more so a trade just to make a trade instead of here's a trade that could potentially help this team out. I mean, again, Grant was a Duck, so there's some history there, but what are your thoughts on that particular trade?
I think that it'll be really interesting, and we'll get hopefully confirmation of this very soon. Ryan Kesler was injured in the Detroit game a couple of days ago, and he ended up actually being sent back to Anaheim for further evaluation. Kesler's injury struggles with his hip and with him not necessarily playing at 100% have been extremely well documented. And I don't think he's missed he's made his season debut in the third game of the season and hasn't missed a game since for a lot of us, to the detriment of his health and his play, because he hasn't had a point in about a month now. So if Kesler is out long term, which might be the case, then getting a center in Derek Grant certainly makes sense. However, they still heavily lost that trade because, yes, Derek Grant had a career year for Anaheim last year with 12 goals. I actually really liked Grant and was kind of sad to see him go because I think he's exactly kind of what you need in a fourth line center. But the Ducks gave up a pending, under control, restricted free agent with no arbitration rights, with definitely some scoring upside in Joseph Blandisi, who was playing extremely well for the San Diego Goals, for a 29, 30-year-old pending, unrestricted free agent. Like, to me, that's just, you need a center if Kesler is going to be out long-term, but that's just straight-up bad asset management. So that one, we just don't particularly we understand it, but we think, that may have been more of a panic trade than anything else.
So you have Kesler going on IR, Silverberg now going on IR. How does that change the landscape of the team this season? Because again, like you said, Murray has publicly stated that the Ducks are not cup contenders. But with them on IR, the possibility of them being traded for young assets or draft picks or what have you kind of goes out the window until they get healthy, or at least I'm assuming that it's out the window. How does that change, in your opinion, the outlook on at least this season, the future of this team, until they get healthy? Because again, the trade deadline's in a month, and we don't know how long these two will be out, and if the Ducks will be selling by that point, how does their game plan change with them either still being on IR or just getting off of IR or what have you?
Well, I will say that losing Kesler, I actually believe, is addition by subtraction. If you look at his numbers this season, Kesler was an immense drag on pretty much all the metrics of Silverberg and Cogliano, who he's played with as part of the shutdown line most of the season. He hasn't been able to shut down top lines for the most part all season. He's clearly not playing at 100%. I admire the dude a lot. He's a warrior. I've been to so many Ducks games this season. I watched pretty much all of them. The dude is definitely one of the toughest competitors out there and leaves it all on the ice for every shift. It's just he doesn't have much to give anymore, and he was really dragging down the rest of the team, especially being deployed against top lines who were really just kind of running roughshod over him. So losing Kesler, honestly, is kind of addition by subtraction, and I think that the Ducks really aren't going to be hurting much from losing him. Silverberg, on the other hand, is definitely a little bit more, it's worse for the Ducks for two reasons. Number one, Silverberg was one of these players. He's not a top line scorer, but he is a guy who was playing fairly well during the losing streak, and Bob Murray had called out as being one of the few guys who had the compete level that he was looking for. But he's a good secondary scorer. He's very defensively responsible. He is a very good player and one that I think every single NHL team could use. So that's number one. Losing him certainly doesn't help the Ducks as far as winning games goes. But Silverberg was also the Ducks' most tradable asset. He's the guy who's easiest to move. He's going to be a pending unrestricted free agent. He's making reasonable money at $4 million a season. for the production that he gives. So him being injured, if it's anywhere long term, if it's any longer than, you know, that leads potentially up to the trade deadline, that's severely hampering his trade value. Bob Murray had publicly mentioned that he would like to try and re-sign Silfverberg. I think that is a mistake if the Ducks are trying to get younger and faster and get new blood in the lineup to try and remake themselves. Silfverberg probably needs to go, as good of a player as he is. But if they were shopping him and trading him, that to me is probably the biggest blow to Anaheim there if he's going to be out for any extended period of time.
Well, you played the Ducks, you played the Wild last night, and one name that wasn't in the lineup for Minnesota, Zeno Niederreiter, who got traded to the Carolina Hurricanes for Victor Rask. And according to people that follow and watch the Hurricanes more than I do, this was a terrible trade for Minnesota and a great trade for Carolina. He's had a pretty down season in comparison to his last 2 years, Niederreiter. But Victor Rask has reportedly been pretty invisible the last two seasons in Carolina. 26 games with Carolina this season for Victor Rask. One goal, five assists. Only had 14 goals in 71 games last season. Niederreiter, meanwhile, has decreased in scoring as well. 25 goals in 16-17, 18 goals in 17-18. Now only has 9 goals in 46 games with the Wild this season prior to being traded. But the thing that I've noticed here is that according to At The Point Hockey on Twitter, this season, Nino averages 0.2 goals per game, 0.5 points per game, 1.93 scoring chances per game, and 27 seconds of time of possession in the offensive zone. Victor Rask, meanwhile, 0.04 goals, 0.23 points, 0.88 scoring chances, and 16 seconds of offensive zone possession time. So in my opinion, that's a pretty strange trade for the Wild to make, pretty lopsided. But it doesn't appear to me that Minnesota either knows about analytics or really cares about it.
Yeah, that was a really weird trade. As soon as I saw that it happened, I really couldn't understand what they were doing. That almost felt like, because I know Minnesota, I think, has had some struggles lately as well. And that just more felt like Paul Fenton making a trade to make a trade. He was certainly a more efficient scorer. That's the thing that I think I've seen kind of a trend with some general managers around the league, is that scoring efficiency, I think, is extremely underrated as a stat, both by the general public and by general managers. We saw this with the Ducks a few seasons ago with Kyle Palmieri, when he was traded to the New Jersey Devils for 2 second-round picks. Kyle Palmieri, yeah, he was kind of forced out. There was too many right wings over there, but he was one of the most efficient scorers on the team. He scored at a very high rate for the ice time that he was given when you adjust for that. And you figured he probably should have gotten way more for what he was able to bring. And of course, once he got the ice time needed in New Jersey, he becomes a perennial 30-goal scorer. So this may be something similar to Niederreiter. Niederreiter had a little bit more success over there. But the score, especially when you compare him to Victor Rask, his efficiency in scoring was certainly much better. And you know that if you gave him enough ice time, it's likely he could have given an impact there. I believe Niederreiter's shooting percentage was also kind of in the gutter as well. It may have been having some unlucky streaks there. So definitely a puzzling trade when you look at some of the underlying numbers.
It's weird. I mean, Minnesota got shut out in Anaheim last night. Minnesota right now is clinging on to that final wild card spot with 49 points. But the difference between third in the Central and third to dead last in the Western Conference right now is 5 points. I mean, you got Colorado that are 2-6-2 in the last 10 games with 50 points, and you have Dallas with 50 points have lost 4 in a row. The Wild are having difficulties of their own. They're 5-5 in their last 10. Edmonton is either losing every game inside or winning. They won their last two after losing their last 90,000 games. You have the Anaheim Ducks that have lost their last 12 and now have finally won a game. Edmonton and Anaheim and Minnesota all three have 49 points. Vancouver, who is 500, This is a 500 team that is 1 point behind a wild card spot. They have 48 points. The Blues, that have kind of been better as of recently, but they're still under 500. They have 45 points. Arizona has 45 points. And then you got LA and Chicago with 42 and 41 points. But I mean, this the bottom of the barrel here in the Western Conference is so tight that if Anaheim wins a couple of games and they firmly go into a wild card spot, I mean, granted, they are in the Pacific, so beating Vegas, San Jose, or Calgary is probably out of reach at this point, especially for the Ducks to do at this point. But to at least make a run at a firm wild card spot is definitely not out of the question. But let's say they do. Let's say they, you know, they win their next 3, 4, 5 games. Now they are firmly in the first wild card spot. Did they become buyers? I mean, I don't see them doing that. And we talked about this a little bit earlier. But with the bottom of these, with the Western Conference, except for a few teams being so average and just so. They can't. It seems like a lot of teams can't get out of their own way. They either win a couple of games and then they lose their next 3 or 4, or they're just inconsistent in general. It seems to me like the Western Conference this season is just kind of a circus in terms of who is where on what given day.
Yeah, this seems to be a situation where all the wild card contenders are kind of sitting here going like, hey, you take the wild card spot. No, I insist. You take the wild cards. No, you do it. And then meanwhile, the Pacific Division is just running away being like, you guys are idiots. We're out of here. So that's the really interesting thing, too, is that you look at Edmonton and Anaheim both tied for points with 49, Vancouver right behind them at 48. The Edmonton, Anaheim, and Vancouver are closer to the bottom of the Western Conference standings than they are to third in the Pacific right now. Vegas currently holds the third spot in the Pacific Division with 60 points. So basically the Pacific Division is essentially out of reach at this point. And really the best thing to expect is that wild card run. I personally think for the Ducks that if they do sit into a relatively comfortable wild card spot, I think that you'll see minimal moves, if any, from Bob Murray. You may see a couple things. It'll be similar to what he did last season. Last season, the only moves Bob Murray made at the deadline were trading for Jason Mara and signing Chris Kelly after the Olympic run. That was it. Nothing there. Those trades right there and those signings pretty much indicated that, look, I'm cool with just the playoffs, but I know we're not going to compete, so why even bother? Especially when it was reported that the Ducks were one of the finalists for Max Pacioretty at the deadline, but wouldn't give up. A lot of us think it was Sam Steele who Montreal was asking for. So I think that you'll see something very similar this year, that if the Ducks are in a wild card spot, that maybe just a couple of supplementary moves, maybe similar to what we saw from these bottom six trades the last couple of days, that might happen. If they do fall out, then you'll probably see maybe more significant moves. I would look for potentially Brandon Montour possibly being on the move. Cam Fowler is a name that a lot of teams like that could fetch a return. Even if it was desperate, Ricard Raquel is on an amazing contract, and he could definitely bring in quite a haul. There's a lot up in the air, though, right now, and it's almost impossible to predict what the Ducks are going to do at this point in the season.
Well, let's look ahead to next season or 2 years on the road. Max Comtois, in the 10 games that he played in Anaheim this season, put up, I think, 7 points it was. He looked pretty good, but I kind of question the burning of the first year of his ELC to do that. I think if you're – I don't know why that 10th game was necessary for him. I mean, I'm sure you know better than I do about this, but it seemed like there's no reason to play him for that 10th game if you want to keep him on that ELC. Just keep him for the 9, and if you are certain that you want to send him back to juniors, then do it after game 9 instead of game 10, which I thought was pretty weird. But looking ahead to next season and then and 2 or 3 seasons down the road, how stable is the future for the Anaheim Ducks in your opinion?
I think the future for the Anaheim Ducks is very stable. It is one that is a bright future. I wouldn't necessarily call them you know, their farm system and the young guys who are going to be coming up and start getting regular lineup spots within the next couple seasons. I don't know if I'd necessarily consider the Ducks as on their way to being Tampa level or Washington level or something like that. The Ducks have a very deep prospect system in the way that they have a lot of players who in all likelihood will be regular productive NHLers. What they lack right now is somebody who projects out as a true blue chip, true top end game breaker, first line talent. They lack somebody like Kotkaniemi, I always have trouble pronouncing his name, Elias Pettersson, you know, those kind of types of prospects that truly can be great game breaking, franchise altering people. The Ducks, in my opinion right now, don't have anybody that projects that. I think that maybe one of these players, and one of these players being Comtois, Steele, Terry, and Max Jones, who are kind of the top prospects, at least on the forward side that the Ducks have, I think one of them maybe has the ability to develop into one of those prospects. I actually think that person might be Max Jones based off his skill level, but they have plenty of people to take up the mantle and to lead the Ducks into the next era of hockey. But in my opinion, they do lack the true top high end talent that a team needs, specifically in the Ducks' case, to replace somebody like Ryan Getzlaf. Because once Ryan Getzlaf is no longer effective, and we're hoping he ages like Joe Thornton, and it looks like he very well may do that if he keeps his health up. But if Getzlaf starts falling off at some point, which he will eventually, and the Ducks don't have anybody out there who can potentially replace that type of production and be that type of player for him, the Ducks very well could find themselves, I would say, very similar to the position Minnesota is in right now. Not bad enough to tank and really rapidly rebuild their farm system, but good enough to, you know, sit here and make the playoffs occasionally and never pick high enough or never make any sort of a big move to try and rebuild that team and get towards that next level. So that's really kind of the worrying thing here. However, the prospects coming up, I think, should be very interesting, and there is a lot to work with there.
Well, this really ties into my poll question here. I tweeted this out yesterday with the expectation that we were going to record yesterday, and then I got that text with the tickets, and then the question still stands. I don't think anything has really changed in the 24 hours except for the Ducks win, but which of these events in Anaheim will happen first? The four choices, this poll got about 100, over 125 votes here. The four choices, I'm going to list them off to you before telling you which choice won, because the poll ended, but before telling you which choice was in the lead, I'm going to list them off to you, and then I want your answer to the poll. So the four choices were: one, Murray gets fired; two, Carlisle gets fired; three, big name gets traded; or four, Ducks go on a win streak. Now, with the win last night, I mean, anything is possible now, but which of the four would you choose?
Definitely the big name player traded. That's one that is just Bob Murray's calling card. He will trade the players before he either fires his coach or worries about his job security. Bob Murray did sign a contract extension earlier this season for a couple of years, I believe with a third year team option as well. So to him, he's got the job security, and most of us agree that he's got the job security. We joke a lot on Anaheim Calling about, it's not really a joke, like, we genuinely do think Randy Carlisle needs to be fired, but none of us really realistically expect Carlisle to be fired. He is in the last year of his contract with a team option, and supposedly it has been reported that it's written into Carlisle's contract that he will get a front office job with the Ducks when he is done coaching. So we feel that the plan is to have him finish out the rest of this season and to have him transition over into a front office role. So we mostly do the fire Carlisle thing to kind of increase public pressure, because I think most of us agree that at this point, if Carlisle is going to get fired, it's because the Samuelis, the owners of the Ducks, will step in and threaten Bob Murray's job security unless they fire him, which does not appear to be the case. So player trading really is going to be the logical outcome as far as we're concerned.
And I mean, that is the choice that got the most amount of votes. Murray getting fired only got 7% of the vote. Carlisle getting fired, 32% of the vote. Big Name gets traded, 46% of the vote. And Ducks going to win streak is at 15% of the vote. And I mean, what do you think about the reported clause that Carlisle gets a front office job after his contract is over? There's a double-edged sword here, and I want your opinion on this, because it's definitely, it's not the weirdest clause, but it's definitely one that is kind of strange in the whole context of hockey jobs, I think.
Yeah, I think number one, it shows that the problem that we're seeing right now, in our opinion, the main reason why Carlisle isn't getting fired is because Carlisle and Bob Murray are close. Supposedly, when he fired Carlisle the first time around, that was one of the toughest decisions that he ever had to make, and he agonized, and he didn't want to do it, but he felt like he was up against a wall and had no other choice. The other important thing to remember is that as soon as Carlisle was fired in Toronto, he came over back to the Ducks, and he scouted for the Ducks for, I think it was like a season and a half or two seasons before Boudreau ended up getting fired. So he was already doing scouting for the Ducks before he was brought back in. Basically, simply put, Bob Murray and Randy Carlisle are very close together. They're good friends. And this seems to be more partially a pride issue, but partially also an issue of not wanting to fire his friend, and that he'd rather go out and do anything else other than fire the head coach, even if that seems to be probably the most obvious solution here. So the other thing that we've heard is that Carlisle does have a good reputation as a scout. I don't know. I can't really speak to how good of a scout he is or kind of what the Ducks are looking for. I think that he would certainly probably be better utilized as a scout than as a head coach. And I don't think there were too many people who would disagree with that. I think we're fine with that for the most part, but it is something that is a little bit problematic to us. And I think just really illustrates the entire situation here of friendships kind of polluting the product on the ice.
I think you're totally right on that. I think it's kind of strange. I think it's not the best way to go about it, especially when the team isn't doing well. I mean, to kind of gloss over the fact that Carlisle is not having a great season behind the bench and say, oh, you know, we're going to do literally anything else besides firing my good friend, Randy Carlisle, I think is, I don't really like that aspect of that friendship. I mean, again, obviously, you know, having friends is great, but to kind of let that overshadow the fact that, hey, Randy Carlisle probably should not be the coach anymore is kind of, I don't think that's the right move. I do think Carlisle should probably be removed for who? I mean, it could be anybody's guess. I'll submit my resume. You can submit your resume. I don't know how much you've coached. I've coached one season of collegiate club roller hockey. That's about all I did. However, we did make the regional final that year. Oh, that's all I'm going to say about that. We lost to an undefeated team in the final, and I'm still salty about it. But we did make the final. So hey, for my coaching resume, I only got one season, but it was pretty successful.
I've got 1 year of rookie league under my belt, so I think I personally am ready. And I was player of the month for the system, the Rinks Westminster Ice, in my first season of rookie league. So, you know, Ducks, hire me. I'm ready. I'm willing.
I mean, I can't take a lot of the credit for that season, because the team was very good. It's kind of like the John Cooper situation in Tampa Bay. It's like, well, the coaching is there, but the team is so good that it doesn't really matter.
But did they have the compete level?
That's right. Of course. Well, again, right. You can't be the Ducks and then just not compete.
Exactly.
CJ, this has been incredible. Plug your social media, plug Anaheim Calling. tell people where they can follow you, where they can listen to you, and where they can read your stuff.
Of course. You can follow me on Twitter at CJ Woodling, at CJ WOODLING. I'm usually tweeting mostly about duck stuff, sometimes other random miscellaneous stuff. Feel free to drop in, say hi. I love talking to people and love talking hockey. Anaheim Calling at Anaheim Calling. The Twitter account there. I also run that account most of the time, but I also do get help from a couple of my wonderful staff, Eric and George, and we live tweet a lot of the games as well. We do have a post-game podcast after every single Ducks home game. We actually record a live post-game podcast on Twitch, twitch.com/AnaheimCallingSBN. You can drop in there, and it's also available on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, everywhere thereafter. And Twitter, and we're also available for AnaheimCalling.com, where most of our articles are. We've been I think my staff has been doing a wonderful job lately with all the coverage on the losing streak and, you know, the situation with Carlisle and Bob Murray and these trades. So there's a lot going on right now. There's plenty to read up. You can find us across all these different areas and join in and being miserable with us.
Thank you, CJ. I really appreciate you taking the time. And also, thank you for being flexible and switching times with me. If I would have known earlier, I obviously would have scheduled a different time. But I really appreciate you being flexible and agreeing to talk hockey with me on Friday as opposed to Thursday night, which, again, I had my notes prepared. I was ready to go, had my mic on, and I was really getting ready. And then I got this text. I was like, "Oh well, now I got to throw my notes out the window here." And I'm very, very appreciative that you were willing to switch times with me.
Yeah, of course, not a problem at all, Andrew. Thanks so much for having me on. This was a blast.
Awesome, thank you, CJ. And this is, of course, another episode of Cho Squared. I'm your host, Andrew Chelling. I'll talk to you again next week, episode number 32. Next week, stay tuned.